Winnipeg. Snowy, sleepwalking Winnipeg. My home for my entire life. I need to get out of here. I must leave it now. What if I film my way out of here? It's time for extreme measures. I sublet for 1 month the house in which I grew up.
In action.
Only here can I properly recreate the archetypal episodes from my family history. I hire actors to play my brothers and sister. My dog, Toby, to be played by my girlfriend's dog, Spanky. It's time to get to work.
Mother, I had an accident. I ran into a deer.
What were you doing out there?
A track team party.
Where did it happen? In the back seat.
What happened?
The real party.
My mother. As perennial as the winter, as ancient as the bison. A magnetic pole, a direction from which I can't turn for long.
In action.
You have to feed us.
My cooking days are over.
We brought the parakeet with us. I'll call him off if you get up and make us some meatloaf.
Right now.
Once this filmed reenactment is complete, I can free myself from the heinous power of family and city and escape once and for all.
Welcome to the Viewfinder podcast. Today we are going to talk about some local news in the film industry. We're going to talk about Guy Maddin's My Winnipeg and some other stuff, probably.
Yeah. We're just going to find out as we go along.
Yeah. So My Winnipeg, well, let's just do a little spiel about it first. So it was a 2007 film. So written, directed by Guy Maddin. And it takes place, as we all know, right here in Winnipeg with like some of the institutions of Winnipeg, like the Sherbrooke Pool, the Forks. I can't remember what else now. All sorts of stuff.
A lot of landmarks from Ellis.
Yeah, lots of, because that's where he lived. So he kind of wanted to go back to his home, 800 Ellis. Yeah, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It was also originally titled Love Me, Love My Winnipeg, which is like a way less good title.
It's less interesting.
It's less interesting. But it maybe what it does is like kind of tells you more about what it is.
Yeah. My Winnipeg is more, you know, open to interpretation, I think.
Yeah.
Also, before we go on, we should also say our names.
I was going to say, we should. I'm like, I don't know what that means. I'm just going to keep talking. So I'm Marley.
I'm Ophelie.
I'm Cassidy.
I'm Sam.
Hi, the Viewfinder team.
The Viewfinder team.
Okay, so I guess let's just start. Like, did you guys like it or did you hate it?
My initial reaction, I think, is it took me a while to adjust to the style, I think. I was kind of confused between... Off the bat, I really liked the narration because it was kind of poetic and I like really liked that, but... I was a little thrown off by the very first text flash that was happening. I was like, oh, okay, so this is a different kind of approach to film. But by the end of it, I actually really liked the style of it.
Yeah, his voice is kind of like hypnotic. And so when he starts and he's like, the forks.
It's like,
it's like really sort of bizarre. I was watching it and my dad came downstairs. He's like, what are you watching? It's like some like weird, I'm just like, it's My Winnipeg. It's like the essential Winnipeg film. But yeah, so it starts off as kind of, it's his voice mostly because it's kind of starts off and it's like him on the train trying to escape.
Yeah.
trying to get the hell out of Winnipeg.
It's filmed a very old school like style. Like it looks, it's 4:3, black and white, and a lot of backlit effects. I notice, or back projection effects, I should say.
Yeah, kind of like old horror movie like style.
And a little bit almost. Shaky, like a little bit dizzying almost at times. But I think that adds to the whole, you know, sleepwalking like vibe of
It
was almost like typical experimental film. Personally, when I watched it just 2 days ago and I was surprised because everyone's always kind of told, because my boyfriend had seen it a long time ago and as well as some other people I know and just you guys as well, just going like, oh, it's so weird. It's like, I didn't actually think it was that weird. It made a lot of sense, but I think I tend to watch a lot of movies that are like that.
Yeah, and you're right. It is like kind of like it has a lot of experimental film like kind of standards. I think really for me, just the novelty is that it's Winnipeg, so there's just this weird like feeling around it.
And I think that's one thing that he really taps into is like this film is Winnipeg, and a lot of people who are Winnipeggers can relate to it in that really, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole, like, it's the wintertime and we just want to sleep.
Yeah, like how relevant could that be right now?
Absolutely, yes.
Like, the first couple frames, I just, even though it was these old-time clips, I immediately got nostalgic just watching it. And I was like, God.
This is my city.
This is, yeah, exactly. And, like, I think I was reading an interview with him, and when this movie came, he was commissioned by a producer to write and direct this movie, and the producer said, well, I want you to make a movie, but that doesn't just paint Winnipeg as a frozen shithole.
Yeah.
And so Guy Madden, what he took with this is, I think his vision was to create kind of the mythos of Winnipeg, mm-hmm. where, because there's a lot of things that are true, like the If Day thing was true.
And like I was going to ask you guys, what things
what's
are
true and what's false.
Not true.
Because
he blended fact and fiction.
Exactly. And he wanted to create myths that seem to have always been there about Winnipeg. And I think that's the thing I just absolutely loved about the film.
For sure. I love that. Yeah, some of the things like I was aware of, like the strike of 1919 and like mm-hmm. other things. But then it's like, wait, what is that? Like, did that really happen? Like. Because he starts, blending kind of that fantasy in. And, like, I actually had to fact check some stuff. I'm like, okay, where does the fantasy end? Where does...
Yeah, where does it begin? Because it's all just streamed together.
Yeah, but, like, I think he did a... I think that... Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like he was told... Okay, what you just said. He was told to make it not about Winnipeg being shitty, but like I don't know if he like fully succeeded on that. He kind of did in a ton.
He still wanted to make it about Winnipeg, about how Winnipeg is kind of shitty, but he did it in his own unique style and way.
Because like the driving force behind the movie is that he's trying to escape, but like all of these film is his shitty things keep pulling him back. And like, I don't know if it's shitty things specifically about Winnipeg, but just sort of like, you know, relationships and like, you put down your roots in a place, it just becomes hard to leave, right?
And and I think, like, Winnipeg's just especially unique because this is a city that everyone makes fun of, everyone, like, shits on, basically.
Yeah.
And I feel like for a lot of other people who grew up in Winnipeg, it's like, sure, it's kind of shitty, but this is our city and there are many things to love about it that only we as Winnipeggers know about.
Yeah, and I think we all, like, can relate on that level where we acknowledge that he talks about the cold a lot, and it's almost like the glue in Winnipeg that everyone can relate to, and it's like a conversation starter anywhere you go. It's like we're all going through this experience together, and it's like it really comes out in the film, I think, and he did it really well.
Mm-hmm.
The Winnipeg imagined in this movie is almost like it's almost straight out of a fantasy movie. It's talking about, like... Or a realistic fantasy movie, talking about sleepwalkers and the keys to places. I could easily see this Winnipeg fitting straight into, like, if you took the Tolkien age and fast-forwarded it into modern times, like, Winnipeg's almost a city out of that. Like, it's a very mystical city in this movie.
Yeah. Well, doesn't he calls it himself, like, a docu-fantasia.
Mm-hmm. Almost reminds me of Tarkovsky, the Russian director, because the basis for all his movies is he wants all his movies to reflect dreams. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I would suspect that might have Madden, especially being, like, a film studies professor and such, he likely also kind of follows that same idea of how he wants his films to be basically, like, our dreams and shaped around that way.
Yeah, like a dreamscape. And it definitely has that. Like, everything's kind of blurry and, like, wispy and,
And it just moves on. Like, it lingers onto something and then it just moves on.
Exactly.
I know, that's like, what I felt, too. I felt like the transition. Yeah. I was going to ask you guys how you felt about, like, the sequence, like, the scenes and how they were set up. And it just kind of seemed like there was that one scene. I can't remember what it was. Maybe I have it in my notes, but there was no narration. It was all just music.
Was it the ballet?
Yeah, the ballet.
Inside of the ledge building.
Yes, exactly. That scene. Seance. And I remember, it was so long and I was just watching it and I was kind of like in a trance. And then all of a sudden there was just no narration. And it was very long, like longer than the other scenes. Mm-hmm. And then it just kind of went into the next scene. Just that was that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really cool.
Yeah, I didn't mind the transitions. Like, I liked that there were kind of little like vignettes of little stories, like he'd talk about whatever himself and his mother, and then it would go like kind of flashback to some like historical thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of, I don't know, I liked that. It does like feel maybe not like a super cohesive movie though. Like there's no, I don't know if there's like a fully fledged like kind of plot line running through it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
for sure, I think it might be hard for
to watch. I don't know.
I know. I don't know if it's harder to follow or if that's, I think that's the point of it, but maybe for some people it wouldn't work.
Yeah, almost like he was making it up as he was going along.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is kind of this like unfinished like quality to it, but
I felt that way with the acting, like his mom and his siblings. Mm-hmm. It was very like he threw it together and he was just, you know, getting these people to just portray his family, and I found it kind of funny. The yeah. mom, the comedic kind of.
Yeah, so I was and way Savage. Funnier.
The
yeah.
Ledge Man bit was just so funny. Yeah,
yeah. It was way fun. Like, this movie obviously has a pretty big reputation in mm-hmm. Winnipeg.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd never seen it before now. And what surprised me is how funny it was. Yeah, I was, like, laughing more. Like, yeah. I guess I have a bit of a weird sense of humor, but it was quite funny.
Yeah, there were some funny bits in it.
Yeah, and like, yeah, Anne Savage as his mother is like great. Yeah. Like she's like a hilarious B-movie actress. And I think I remember reading somewhere that this was kind of like a comeback role for her. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like she's like the perfect blend of like creepy, but also like,
and
yeah,
like innocent, like comedic. Like, cute,
like yeah. Yeah, I liked her. I thought the casting was good, but I do agree that like the family scenes were like really sort of bizarre, but I think that was his intention.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, I love the Ledge Man bit. Do you think it was, like, a little bit too much on the nose? Like, obvious? Like, oh, he's jumping, but he's convinced by his mother? It seemed a little too obvious for this movie, almost.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, everything that seems obvious about this movie, like I kind of wonder if I'm just like looking at the surface level, because everything seems like it's like this weird mystery, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. And this was probably, I think, the third or fourth time I've seen this movie, but like I almost want to like watch it again. Like I should have watched it once, just like quick through, and then like really like sat down and watched mm-hmm. it. But it's just entertaining, so that I kind of like just forgot mm-hmm. that I was like trying to like analyze it.
Yeah, and I was mm-hmm. watching it with my roommates, and they both like, they absolutely loved it as well.
Yeah, had and they seen it before?
No, they haven't. They hadn't seen it. They hadn't seen it before, so we were both like new eyes.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. That's so funny that so many people haven't seen this, but no. It's like.
And there's
no. The movie.
There's a part where there was the line inside these black arteries. There's actually a mural.
I love that. I love that little part of it.
There's actually a mural behind the Goodwill Social Club, a bar that's close by between Sherbrooke and Maryland, that mm-hmm. has like this huge black and white mural, and it has that line inside these black arteries, and it was like. I know what the drawing looks like, but I never noticed the words. And like, yeah, my roommate was just like, oh my God, that's like what's behind the Goodwill.
That's so funny. That's hilarious. I'm yeah. gonna have to check that out for sure.
I like that he says like the back lanes, like a grid of back streets, and how Winnipeggers use them by word of mouth. Yeah. And you know how the black arteries of Winnipeg, like how that was such a creative take on back lanes, you know?
Yeah. And it kind of gets to the. It's just a really like apt description of like kind of the culture.
Yeah.
Back lanes. I don't know. Is there a culture of back lanes? I think there might be.
So detailed. Like in that little segment, he talked about how one taxi company used the back lanes and one taxi company used the front lanes.
Yes.
And I noticed that the logos were correct on the taxis. Like you had the Unicity Unicity was stuck blocked by the Duffies, and I was like,
that's
super
so
enjoyed
funny.
That I noticed that detail.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's so many details I'm sure that I missed out on. Also, just the fact that it's like it's stuff we see every day, so like,
oh yeah, you kind of become numb to it. You
can cross for those, sure.
You know, talks about all these different landmarks, and you're like, yeah, I know this, but do you take the time to look at it really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the horses?
Yeah,
I was
not real.
Okay, yeah, I was.
It was
say,
not real.
I was watching. I was like, "Okay, no."
Yeah, that was a super bizarre scene, and then so like, there's the horse heads frozen in the river, and people are like having hot chocolate.
Yes,
like,
and he turns it into like the fact that the it becomes something that people want to see, and they just leave the horses frozen in the river, and then it becomes like a romantic thing, like where you take like dates.
Yeah, like it was really bizarre, and like,
yeah. Like I wonder where that came from in Guy Madden's mind, like what interpretation was he trying to communicate there?
It's funny how something like so fantastical can be like, did that actually happen? It's like you're like almost convinced that it actually happened.
Yeah, even exactly. It's like.
And
obviously. It obviously fits in, like that kind of story would fit into Winnipeg almost. Yeah. Like I wouldn't be surprised if I found out it was true.
Yeah.
And the stuff that did happen were just like, oh my God, I can't believe that actually happened. Like, for example, the if they sequence, I was like, that can't be real. That can't be real. And my roommate was just like, oh, I think it happened in another Midwest town. And it was like, no, it actually happened in Winnipeg. Like this whole association, they came around, they did this fake invasion in order to raise money for war efforts. Mm-hmm. And they made what is equivalent to $620 million today or something.
Oh my God.
Wow. Yeah, because they were just harassing people and going like, well, this is what will happen when the Nazis invade.
He says a line there too. He says, in Winnipeg, every day is if day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh.
Wow. So funnily enough, I just wanted to Google like about the horses. I thought maybe something would come up, but there's so many people like on forums like, are the horses like what's the deal with that? Like, are they were they real? Like, people are like seriously concerned on
it
the
really
internet.
It really resonated with a lot of people.
I guess so, yeah.
But maybe it's like a way of communicating to how it's just the cold part of it and how like frozen and like maybe being trapped. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, I think, goes with the theme really well, but it is so bizarre that, I needed to, like, Google it after. Yeah, I don't understand.
I really, that's why I love the Ledge Man bit, is because I knew that wasn't true, so I'm like, okay, this movie's pulling crap.
Yeah.
So I was able to realize that not everything in this, it's going to be a fantasy Winnipeg, even though it's like, the Ledge Man bit really clued me into, even though anecdotes are going to be somewhat torqued or fake, even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
And I kind of, Cassidy probably will have much to comment, but the whole scene with the Winnipeg Arena, the sports.
Yeah.
That honestly, like, I'm not a sports fan, but I got, like, emotional watching that because I do know how important, like, hockey is in the city because, and, like, it was just, I don't know, that part was just amazing because it was about the Winnipeg Arena, a place where like working class families could go and play hockey, and it wasn't this elite thing. And now that's all torn down. We have the Bell MTS Center, but that's for people who have all the money to spend on luxury seats.
Yeah,
that was an interesting moment in the film too, because that was the very first scene in the film that there was color. Mm-hmm. Showed the MTS Center, and I was like, oh, like this, it just
are the Bell MTS place now.
Exactly. But yeah, he grew up, he said, he's like, I grew up in the locker rooms, and like he has a deep connection to it. So yeah, it was kind of like nostalgic.
Mm-hmm.
He got at the core, and the one line that resonated with me and kind of revealed a lot of the motivations behind that is talking about the Winnipeg Arena as a paternal amphitheater, and mm-hmm. and that sort of that how that place became almost a father figure in his head, and it's
like it helped him, like that's interesting. Like he grew up there, kind of thing.
Yeah,
like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
And I felt he was also almost speaking to gentrification too, because just the tearing down of these important historical buildings to basically, well, what's there now is Polo Park.
yeah.
Like that's why I think the emphasis on, like, every city has its ghosts and every city has its, you know, its history and things that are gone now, but they stay with you. And
like, we can do something to prevent this, but nobody's really doing anything. They're just kind of letting this happen to our city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of really sad. Like
that scene, the arena scene in particular, was the first one that like clued me in to almost like the narrator as a character in the movie. It's like that really solidified it in my head as like the narrator is some is not just the narrator. He's active
yeah,
in this.
Yeah, he's
a lot more active in this story than I first gave him credit for.
Yeah, like his portrait.
The great part about talking about I love the bit about the old guys playing hockey.
Oh yeah,
it's
yeah.
just
oh yeah.
That was really good. That yeah, was cute. I liked that one. Yeah.
Well, if we're gonna he got into the core of something that a lot of like this is something that I've never seen discussed outside of hockey forums. I'm a pretty big hockey fan, but when the arena came down and the extensions were the only thing that fell down, and that's a true story. And right. a lot of Winnipeggers saw that as a time. A lot of Winnipeggers did see that as a sign, like the Winnipeg Arena is one last standing up to the NHL. Is that the mm-hmm. extensions for the NHL came down, but the core of the building remained intact.
Right.
And that wasn't planned. That's something that just happened naturally and has its own mythos. And it was interesting to see that. It was interesting to see that in this film. That's very like. It's a very like art house film, and like a lot of art house style things like almost turn like you. I get the feeling that a lot of that kind of thing almost they look down on sports, but here it was almost propping it up.
Right. Yeah. It's not a common like kind of like genre. Like there are like
matter.
Experimental films about sports.
Yeah.
Are there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, no, I don't think usually... so. And yeah, because again, I'm not really a sports fan. So
but
I don't really
feel...
watch sports film, but this is like, mm-hmm. it was incorporated in such a way where it was more about the culture of it rather than the sport itself and mm-hmm. more
yeah.
just of the background of everything of the people, the type of people who would go there for the hockey game,
yeah,
the
like
people
the community.
Who are playing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's just how that
what's important. And NHL ain't, I can't say anything right. The NHL is kind of the opposite of that. It's about making millions of money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that, I don't even know. What am I even saying anymore?
Well, it got, he talked about how his dad went up in a puff of cigarette smoke when the building went down or when the Jets left or something like that.
Yeah.
I was like, I would have liked to send, he just had a heart attack at the center ice, but instead he went up in a puff of cigarette smoke.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like,
that was very,
I was
yeah.
like, I was like anticipating the setup to like, oh, he died later on, but it's like, no, he went up in a puff of cigarette smoke. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Sums it up.
So was there anything, so like, I guess it seems like everyone really liked the film. Was there anything that you didn't like about it? Like anything that made you kind of go, ugh?
It's a movie you need to be, it's not a movie you can just sit down and watch is
yeah.
the thing. And that's like, I could, like, you have to be in a certain mood to enjoy
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And you have to like actively kind of watch it. Like
yeah.
it's not.
Can't passively, you know, watch it without being engaged, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why I think like. Originally, like how I said before, there was some things that I didn't like, but in the end, it just, I couldn't picture the film without all of it together. Like it was good for the type of film that it was, and it communicated everything that I thought it set out to. And I don't know, like I related to it so much in a lot of ways. So I really liked it. I liked the creative approach.
Well, it drew me in right away
yeah.
because you had the stock footage going on early on, mm-hmm. and I was like wondering if it would stay that style the same, and then I just saw a picture of just
yeah.
a bunch of drifts of snow, and I'm
yeah.
like, oh, and it's in the same style as the stock footage, and it's with the same background music, and that just juxtaposition of like happy stock footage. Happy old-timey stock footage, and
mm-hmm.
then you just cut to a big mound of snow, and that even made me laugh. Just that editing trick made me laugh.
Yeah.
It kind of drew me
there
in
was a wide,
right away.
A wide range of like emotions that he took you through, because there was parts where it was very intense. Like there was a scene where the narration, his voice will start to pick up and it'll get louder, and he'll start talking like the hairdresser scene where he's like chop, chop, and it was like all these chopping sounds, and it was like dying hair,
yeah.
and like, and then all of a sudden it would calm down, and it would start talking slower, and like make you feel like angry and then make you feel sad. And
yeah. His voice is definitely like a huge part of the film, I think.
Oh,
and
totally.
Just it kind of like it determines the tone throughout. Because yeah, he starts off with that immediately, I think, and then it kind of does it end? What's the ending? I can't remember right now.
The ending. I think it ends with the actor who plays Cameron and the mother.
Right.
She's holding him in the snow.
And he's so, like, the background in photos becomes more important than the people in them. And I think that really emphasizes the importance of place. Like this whole movie is like, you know, sense of place and like Winnipeg and the things that make up Winnipeg. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think his brother died.
Yeah,
if I'm not 16. Mistaken.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's like just kind of knowing that gives the whole like film a different kind of meaning too. Like it's kind of, I don't know, it's sad. It's almost like he's trying to escape the like his family, which is like not a family
anymore.
But
yeah. And, like, just the scenes with the mother and the sister as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, I wanted to get to that for sure.
So, just the part where she starts just, like, accusing Janet of basically sleeping with the guy who was helping her out with the car when she crashed into a deer. And it was just, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was that line? That's a euphemism for something. Yeah. Everything's a euphemism in Winnipeg.
Yeah, and you could just
underestimate the tenacity of a Winnipeg mom. I wanted to ask you guys about
that.
Well,
you could just see
that was a thing.
You could just see the generations as like of trauma as a woman, just kind of in that moment, just carrying being
that one
being
scene.
Passed on. Yeah,
yeah.
Do you guys think he did a good job of blending his history of his own life with Winnipeg, like? You know, like historically, like the city with his own personal life.
Well, personally, because I've like lived close to the landmarks, like the Arlington Bridge, I just, when he started, like when that scene where he's just driving over it every time, because I lived in the North End from when I was 6 years old to when I was 10 years old. So I just remember like driving over that bridge almost every day. And even to this day, when I drive over it, I just feel extremely like nostalgic, just remembering. I just get a huge sense of deja vu. And so that part was like really kind of emotional. And as well as the Sherbrooke Pool, I literally live right across there. I go swimming there. Mm-hmm. And I thought just the whole scene there was hilarious. And the pools within the pool within the pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, like, I mean, I grew up outside of the city, so I don't maybe have that kind of like same like daily connection to some of these places, but I mean, since I've been going to school and like I went to University of Winnipeg, so kind of like in that area, but I think he does do a good job of that. I think he blends his own personal history with Winnipeg well, but I also just don't think there's a way to like maybe unblend it.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, it's so much part of who I am.
Yeah.
Oh, I also have another thing that I wanted to talk about, the treasure hunt. So there was the treasure hunt that CN Rail, one of those, where they basically got people to do the scavenger hunt of the landmarks in Winnipeg. And the whole thing was if they won, they could get a ticket out of Winnipeg. But what happens is everyone keeps exploring every part of the city that in the end, no one ever took the train out of there. And I think this is exactly what kind of this film
was.
He was going into his past, trying to detangle his life from Winnipeg. But the thing is he's going back and revisiting the landmarks of his past and just realizing that you can't really escape.
You can't escape
Winnipeg.
And even if you do leave, it's just there, right? It's a part of you.
It'll always be a part of you, for sure.
There's shit in every city, but here it's easier to deal with. Because this is where your roots are.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
It's so unique in that way. I'm just reading here a piece of Guy Maddin's, he's kind of talking about his interpretation and what like inspired him in the film. And there's just touching on what you said, Ophelia, about being nostalgic going over the bridge. And he says here, Winnipeg is perhaps the most nostalgic city in the world without even realizing it, for we are actually living in each moment in the past, present, and maybe even the future without ever feeling like anything other than right now. So I don't know, like, I think that might be unique to Winnipeg, that mm-hmm. maybe we are a nostalgic culture by just, you know, the how we live.
That's my final note. Like after the movie was finished, I was like, this, I thought the movie was primarily about nostalgia.
Yeah.
It was a movie about the nostalgia of your family as well as the nostalgia of Winnipeg. And that was like the big overarching, that was, I think, the theme that tied everything together was just nostalgia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. That train thing was very interesting to me because, yeah, it's like in the end, it's like you win the ticket, but you don't want to leave because, like, you realized your, like, inner love 22. Or whatever for it. And, like, yeah, I mean, I think that is kind of the thing, exactly kind of what you said earlier, hopefully. Like, people rag on Winnipeg, but... it's like poetic. Yeah. But like, it's like, is it worse than any other city? Like, it's yeah. not really. It's just, I don't know.
When I went to live in Phoenix, I mean, it didn't work out because I was going there for a boyfriend and we broke up. But I was intending on staying in Phoenix. And Phoenix is obviously, you know, like a hot, gorgeous city with, you know, mountains and palm trees and everything you could want, really. But, like, there were times when I would think about Winnipeg and, I don't know, it was different. It was, like, there's something about Winnipeg that has, maybe it's the people, maybe it's, you know, growing up here or something. Yeah. But it's just, you can have the city with everything, all the amenities, all the opportunities you want, but there's something about, I guess, where you come from, especially maybe if it's a smaller place. There's more connection, there's more.
For sure, yeah. I think just having, yeah, it's just a part of you, right? Like, where you grew up,
yeah.
for the most part, it's just... you kind of
carry it with you.
You talk about, like, I grew up outside of the perimeter, so you see Winnipeg as this, like,
the city,
as the city. It's yeah. the oh, city. Yeah.
For sure.
And it's almost unique in that mm-hmm. way. There's no other city even close to it, really, unless, like, there's tiny yeah. Manitoban cities.
We're the only big city for miles, yeah. even going into Ontario. Like, yeah. Kenora's the next biggest city. Mm-hmm. Then we have Saskatchewan. It's like Saskatoon and Regina are not that big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's true. Like, we're the capital of our,
it's our very province. Much.
We're all there is, basically. Yeah.
True.
Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to Frappuccinos with Filmmakers, where I chat with professionals in the film industry over coffee. I'm Sam Cortez, and today we're going to talk to Chris Petko, CEO of Build Films, a Winnipeg-based film company that makes all kinds of amazing films, and I talk with him about his work in conservation films in Churchill, Manitoba. We got to talking about while he was up there working, he happened to meet his wife.
And then initially, like before I met my wife, who is a marine biologist and works with beluga whales, she's like known as the beluga queen in Manitoba.
So awesome.
Yeah, she's cool. But before I had met her through this work,
yeah.
and before anything like happened between us, like I'm going off and I'm going on dates, and then I realize I'm like, you know, it's way better to be like on a date. It's like it's actually more effective to say that you're working with 57,000 other whales than it is to say anything else.
Yeah.
So then I was like, okay. So now I think I like. The chicks dig it, so now I'm on to something.
Oh yeah.
But then I ended up marrying the marine biologist who's just like, yeah, whatever you're doing, I'm doing it times 10.
Well, I think there's one thing that we can all take away from talking with Chris.
The chicks dig it. The chicks dig it.
The chicks dig it. Thanks so much, everybody. I'm Sam, and this was Frappuccinos with Filmmakers. See you later.
what have you been watching this past week or listening to, or even, like just any film related things? Give us your recommendation.
Well, since you're looking at me, I have two recommendations. One, because it's kind of related to my Winnipeg, where it's called Nostalgia, and it's by Tarkovsky, and it's really, it'll be really hard to get into. It's very dense, but it's kind of the same idea, because at the time, I believe he filmed it in the 70s, and this was after he left Russia. He was not able to go back, and he was living in Sweden, I think, and... Or no, this one was filmed in Italy. And the basis of the film is just basically him longing to go back, but he can't go back. He's not allowed back.
Interesting.
So, but it has a very similar, it's like not in black and white, but very muted tones. And the whole film kind of plays like a dream. There's some dream sequences, and the ending part just like is so intense. And it's not funny like My Winnipeg, but it plays on the same ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You would have to really sit down and spend an afternoon watching it and trying to understand it, though. And my other recommendation, because I just watched it yesterday, is Green Room.
I've seen that.
Yeah, for you horror fans out there. I enjoyed it, like...
Yeah, it was.
Are you like a horror movie fan though? Like typically,
not really. Like my boyfriend is like a big horror movie fan, but I still enjoy watching it. But this one specifically was like really interesting because, like, I think it's kind of just. Well, basically, the basis of it is like a punk rock band finds themselves in a venue where they're playing for a bunch of Nazis. When they stumble upon a murder. And so basically they get kind of holed up in the green room and they're just kind of stuck there, and they have to try to trick their way out of this green room without being killed by all these Nazis. But of course they're these like young kids. Like,
it's really modern too.
Yeah, it's these young anarchist kids who don't know, like, who don't know shit about fighting. They don't know what to do, but then they're against this whole group of neo-Nazis who are very, very, like, connected and trained.
Right.
And it kind of goes to show, it's kind of, I think, like, the whole idea of it is that you can't really just fight it when it happens. You have to band together with other people and fight these kind of threats.
Mm-hmm. So it's really a great family story about teamwork. At the end of the day, that's what it's about, right?
It's all about those
takeaways.
That's
basically what it is about.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Just pulled it.
I have a recommendation for just a movie to watch. I always recommend this to everybody because I love it. There's two movies. It's Creep and Creep 2. It's on Netflix.
I have not heard of
this.
Oh,
God. It's so good. It's pretty much horror, but it's basically about this guy who, I don't know how to explain it.
Oh, Mark Duplass is in it.
Yes,
I like
he's
him.
Amazing.
He's in a lot of like weird kind of
yes,
flicks.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, I just got recommended this the other day too.
I think I might have actually seen this.
Oh, it's so good. It's kind
I'm
of
just
like
looking at the Wikipedia
like a
page.
Documentary style movie, and he just kind of reels this person in because he wants someone to film the last days of his life because he says that he's sick.
Yeah, but then everything starts spiraling
changes.
Out of control, and it's like, is he lying? Is
oh
he,
my god,
yeah.
It's so
Creep,
good.
Like,
and
that's so funny.
It's such a weird movie because, you know, there's like he's this weird guy, and you really end up really liking him though. Like mm-hmm. he's such a likable mm-hmm. character, and he really commits to the role, and it's so good. And the second one's even better.
I did not realize there was a second one.
Yeah.
Now I know what I'm gonna do this weekend.
Yeah.
Says it's a found footage movie. Is that incorporated well? I always.
I
like,
think
I,
no, it really is.
Yeah,
this is one of those things
don't
I don't
like,
really like that either. But it's actually really good because I think the story's really good and it keeps you guessing. Also, the act—he's just he plays a really believable character.
Yeah,
too.
And I think like they build the found footage aspect into the story really well.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly,
that's my big
like,
problem with them all the time. I'm like, who found this footage
filming,
and who edited it? Is my big question always when I see a found footage movie.
For mm-hmm. sure. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Gonna watch the second one. maybe the first one too, since I can't quite remember it.
We should have just done a horror movie podcast.
Oh god. Cassidy, recommendations? What have you been into lately?
What have I been into lately? I've been kind of going back over the movies that I really, really love and seeing how they hold up. Mm-hmm. And one of those, obviously, for me, would have been Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And that is a great...
Kubrick, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it is. But it's very much... It's basically set in the Cold War, and somebody in the U.S. orders an attack, and the president and the president's war room has to try to stop the attack and stop retaliations and basically try to stop the apocalypse in a very dark and comedic way.
Ooh, right. Has and Peter Sellers.
Yes. Peter Sellers plays like three people in that movie too. Yeah. It's crazy.
Nice. I definitely need to rewatch that one. That's one that I saw... so long ago when I was like a teenager, and so I feel like I probably didn't understand a lot of, like,
you'd probably take more away from it.
Yeah,
now.
And like I just wasn't, you know, as politically aware as I am now. So mm-hmm. like, did you find that it stood up to the test of time? Did it feel relevant?
It felt relevant in the sense that you see just the war room scenes always stick in my mind. It's like, you can't fight in here, gentlemen. It's the war room. And that's like the famous line always like sticks in my head. And even the end, like it goes to like, I see it as like almost a picture of the time when these two world powers were like in such almost open conflict with each other.
Right.
And it's like, at the end, It's the guy's taking pictures with his pen, even though the apocalypse is upon us and unstoppable. And the Russian guy is still with his little camera taking pictures of the war room in the U.S.
Yeah.
And it just speaks to. I think it's very much a movie to go to understand what the mood was like in the Cold War time. Right. I've been going back into a lot of things that I feel like we're losing in our cultural memory. Like I'm also listening to the Hardcore History podcast about World War One,
right?
Because I feel like we've lost World War One in a lot of our cultural history as well. So I'm trying to like reintroduce and learn a little bit more about that time, and it's a fun way to learn about that
time.
That's
cool
for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Marley.
All right. So I watched this super depressing movie. Like, I'm still like kind of shook up with it. So like my mom is usually my movie watching partner. So we chose this one the other day because we couldn't get the movie that we wanted to stream just wasn't working. So this became the second option.
Maybe the better option.
Yeah, maybe. So it's called 45 Years. So I think it was like 2015. It's like a kind of older. And it's kind of this British movie, but it basically, these two people have been married for 45 years, and the husband, he had a previous relationship when he was, like a young man, and then this woman died, but then her body is found, like perfectly preserved in a glacier.
Oh wow.
And so anyway, so they were hiking, she like falls off, and then she's found like 45 years later or whatever. But the whole point of the movie is sort of just the dynamic between the husband and wife, and like her, like him kind of revisiting that like tragedy that happened, and then her having to kind of like figure out, you know, like what where she fits into the whole thing.
I don't mean to interrupt, but is she still alive?
No, she's not. She's not still alive. No, she's okay. Very, very much.
I was thinking like cryogenic, frozen in time.
Like, oh, hello. No. So she's very much dead. But then, so like, kind of just.
I don't think this was a direct to sci-fi movie.
Yeah, no, but like that's kind of an intriguing thought, isn't it? Like,
she's preserved, kind of like.
Yeah,
she's back and all she has is him.
Yeah, well, right? And so I mean, it kind of...
Yes, that'd be great. That's a great movie.
Yeah, now I'm like just disappointed. Yeah. I want to just see that movie now. That sounds awesome. But yeah, so it's not, it's like a pretty slow movie. It's like mostly kind of just based on dialogue and like the dynamic between the two people. So like definitely don't watch it if you're like looking to get rowdy or something. But if you feel, if you want to like maybe have a little bit of a come down and like feel depressed after, then I recommend it.
In a good way, right?
In yeah, that good in, a, way. In a good way, I think. I don't know. Ask me next week. It's still pretty fresh.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was the last movie that I watched that like it just affected me, I guess. I'm like constantly just watching like shit that's on cable or whatever. That's just like, oh, like another Pirates of the Caribbean is out. Like, let me watch that.
The 12th Pirates of the Caribbean.
What about the trashy straight to sci-fi version of Pirates of the Caribbean?
Does that exist?
I'm sure it does, and I'm sure it's amazingly bad. I really like watching straight to sci-fi movies.
Yeah, so, like sci-fi channel movies.
Yes, they're amazing.
Sharknado 5.
No,
have you ever seen
sucks.
Flatliners?
Ooh, oh, I watched that one actually the other day.
I did see that.
Sutherland, I think they're remaking
I watched the remake. I'd seen
the
original.
Ellen Page is in that, right?
Yeah, she's in it. Yeah, and actually Kiefer has a little moment in it too.
Yeah.
Was it good?
I don't know. It's like a straight, it's a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's
that's
not...
That's the only one I remember ever watching on sci-fi because I didn't grow up with satellite.
Yeah. Flatliners, the new one, I don't know. It's like, whatever. It's worth a watch. If you saw the old one and liked
playing
it.
Playing with God.
Yeah.
The consequences.
The consequences. Yeah.
I don't, like, I saw the trailers for that and they're like slick and like super produced and it's like this big Hollywood movie. I'm like, this looks like a straight to sci-fi movie premise.
Right? It's
like, why is this like such a big movie release?
No amount of production value, I think, could have like saved the...
It's like when I watched the straight to sci-fi version of Cowboys versus Aliens and it was good.
That's right. Awesome.
So I think that's enough for today.
We could go on and on and
we
on.
We could.
So next week we'll talk about Goon with
that's the plan.
The very attractive Sean William Scott. And
who else is in that?
Literally, I don't know.
We have a lot of Winnipeggers in the background.
Jay Baruch. I don't know.
Oh, Jay Baruchel?
Yeah, I think he wrote it as well.
I think he did write it, yeah.
Really?
The girl who played... I think he's funny. There's a girl... The main girl plays in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, which is a movie that I really love.
Yeah.
Alison Pill? Right. I'm terrible with that.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Actress, we'll discuss it next week.
Yeah,
for now, thank you for listening. And check out our magazine, because we also have a magazine. If you came across us on iTunes...
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Till next week.
Bye. Wonderful.